The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony, good morning to you from a wet Johannesburg.
Okay, Tov Shavua Tov. I apologize for a slightly nasal sound this morning. I hope that I don't burst out coughing in the middle as well. We'll try and keep it under control. But it's good to have a few extra minutes. I know we're on a little early. There is a lot to talk about. And I actually wanted to talk, to start before getting into the main meat of the news. I wanted to talk about some sporting and cultural issues. And in particular, this recent piece of news that an Iranian footballer has been roundly criticized for taking part in a soccer match that involves an Israeli coach. Now, this is a showcase soccer match that has taken place at the FIFA Arab Cup. And the Iranian soccer player involved is by the name of Mehdi Mahdavikia. And he has sparked massive controversy in Iran for playing in this match when the opposing team is coached by an Israeli coach in the form of Avram Grant. Avram Grant, of course, a well-known name in the world of international soccer, has been the Israeli national coach. He's also coached the Chelsea Football Club in the English Premier League. So he's a name that is pretty much well-known around the international football world. And the Iranian, an Iranian newspaper has come out very much criticizing Mahdavikia for playing in this game. It's interesting that as a result of Avram Grant's involvement, there were three Algerian soccer players who actually withdrew from playing in the game, and quite a number of those who did play actually removed the Israeli flag that was on the shirt of the players in this showcase game. The newspaper that is very much closely associated with the Iranian Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei has come out attacking the Iranian soccer player for playing in this match, which they claim was unrelated to Iran, and he was dressed in the flag of the Zionist regime and against a team coached by a Zionist. That's the words of the newspaper that has criticized him. And what is fascinating for me is that quite a number of people within Iran and around have actually supported him. They've come out saying that he needs to be supported. Some have tried to support him by saying he didn't know that the Israeli coach was involved. Some of them have come out saying he did actually delete or remove the Israeli flag on his shirt. There are some reports that he's even resigned as the head coach of Omid national football team, where he has coached in Iran. But all in all, this is just a classic story of how Iran has chosen to conduct itself on the sporting field. Interestingly, a Syrian player has been expelled from the Syrian national team for playing in exactly the same game. And the Syrian Olympic Committee announced that he was being expelled for playing in this game. And he has come out saying that he is shocked that he's been expelled because he did actually remove the Israeli flag, and that he felt that it was more important to represent Syria in that very important game than to express his opposition to the presence of Avram Grant as the coach of the opposing team. Now, let's compare and contrast that story to another story about Khaza al-Mansouri, who was the first Emirati astronaut in space. And he went up into space in 2019. And he revealed recently that he carried with him an Israeli flag when he went to space. And he brought that Israeli flag to the Israeli pavilion at the expo that's taking place at the moment in the Emirates. Now, interestingly, when he went into space, it was a year before the Abraham Accords were signed, and yet for whatever reason he decided to take this Israeli flag with him. I'm not quite sure if it's related to the fact that one of the crew members on his mission was Jessica Meir, who is an Israeli-American astronaut. She flew actually under the American flag into space, but nonetheless has a very strong Israeli link as well. I'm not sure if it's related at all. But nonetheless, he decided to come along to the Israeli pavilion at the expo dressed in his space suit, and he decided to present this Israeli flag to the Israeli team at the expo, and he's expressed his desire and intention to visit Israel as early as next month. He is expected to visit, amongst other things, the Ilan Ramon Museum and Memorial, which is in Mitzpe Ramon, during his stay in Israel. So two very contrasting, interesting stories, just how much Israel is involved in all these kind of decisions, even on the sporting field and in the cultural field.
Sure, yeah. Sports, culture all get impacted by political viewpoints these days and standpoints. It's such a pity to see. Moving on to something that has consumed our lives for close on 2 years now, and that's, of course, COVID. Israel may reopen their skies within the next 2 weeks following a wide outbreak of Omicron, which is the latest variant that we know of, or the most prevalent and contagious variant that we know of COVID-19 at the moment. If Israel reopens the skies following this wide outbreak, what's the thinking around all of this? How's government dealing with this outbreak? And are there going to be issues with flights being allowed back into the country?
So originally there was this massive move to lockdown, to try and close the borders, to try and prevent Omicron from coming to Israel. It's now clear that that attempt has failed, that Omicron is here, whether we like it or not. More and more Israelis, thousands of Israelis, being diagnosed in the last few days, a huge, huge spike in the number of new cases of infection. Also, a somewhat a slight increase in the number of more serious cases, and clearly this massive outbreak having something of an impact on our medical facilities, the idea being to try as far as possible to protect our medical teams from being overloaded so that we at least have the ability to treat people who are unwell. Now that has become clear that the attempt to keep Omicron out of Israel has failed, the health minister has come out saying that there is the intention to reopen the skies. There seems to be no more logic to closing down the borders when actually there is nothing to close, nothing to protect ourselves against anymore. Omicron is here. There is nothing that we can, nothing much more that we can do to try and keep it out of Israel. And so he is effectively saying, let's just embrace it and say it's here, and let's not at the same time damage our economy, damage our relations with the international Jewish community and the international world in general. Let's just embrace it as best we can now that it's here, and let's just move on. So that seems to be the current thinking, even though new restrictions being implemented in stores and in malls and other areas to try somehow to protect our medical facilities as much as is possible. The Prime Minister himself has gone into isolation due to the diagnosis of his daughter having also been diagnosed with corona. So he yesterday was taken out of the cabinet meeting and sent into isolation, even though all members of the cabinet were required to have a rapid test before entering that cabinet meeting, and all those who were present tested negative, including the Prime Minister himself. He has subsequently had a few further tests, all of which have been negative, but nonetheless, he has gone into isolation as a result of his daughter having been diagnosed. The other piece of news is that Israel has given approval for the use of Pfizer's oral COVID treatment, and Israel has ordered millions of the new tablet that has been approved by Pfizer for treatment of COVID-19 in an attempt somehow to try to relieve the medical facility. So all in all, quite a number of different developments on the front of COVID-19. Still a lot of uncertainty about what the policy really is, about what it is that we're trying to do. But I think that the government is now saying, given the fact that we have to accept that this outbreak has really taken hold in Israel, that there is such a massive increase in the number of people who are being diagnosed over the past few days and expected over the coming few days, let's not go about the task of damaging the economy at the same time. Let's at least give the economy the opportunity to operate, whether it means opening up the skies, whether it means allowing people to go to work, whether it means allowing businesses to function. The strategy right now is let the economy continue. And let's just hope that our medical facilities will be able to cope with whatever is presented. We do understand that Omicron is a less serious form, even though it's highly contagious, but less serious form. So let's hope that our medical infrastructure can cope with this.
Yeah, we seem to have the situation worldwide. South Africa, again, very high figures, yet fatalities and hospitalizations very low. We don't know whether this is the tail end, if this is the final surge. Who knows? We can't be very predictive in terms of our forecasting because we've had so many different things happen within this pandemic in the last 2 years that one can't be too hasty and say, well, perhaps it's near the end, perhaps this is the tail end. It's something we have to keep a close eye on, and we turn to Israel a lot because of their technology and their health standards to be able to get a bit of an understanding of what's happening. Moving on, at a cabinet meeting held in the Golan Heights yesterday, the government has pledged to double the number of Israelis living there over the next 3 years. So I have a two-part question for you, Antti. The first is, how many Israelis are currently living there so that we can get an understanding of what the figure will double to? And how does Israel aim to achieve this doubling of the number of Israelis living in the Golan Heights over the next 3 years?
So it was interesting that yesterday the Israeli cabinet decided to hold its meeting at Kibbutz Mevoh Chama, which is in the Golan Heights, in order to approve this plan to encourage demographic growth in the Golan Regional Council area between now and 2025. Currently, 53,000 Israelis living in the Golan Heights, 27,000 Jews, 24,000 Druze, and 2,000 Alawites. That's generally how the number is divided up, and that is the starting point for what is considered to be one of the most sparsely populated areas in Israel, and hence the reason why the government has decided to try to put some emphasis on demographic growth within the Golan Heights is because of the fact that it's so sparsely populated and feels that that is a good place for people to live, not only in terms of quality of life, but just in terms of trying to relieve a lot of stress that is on the infrastructure in the central part of Israel, and we see that all the time. So at the meeting, the cabinet meeting yesterday, the government decided to plan for two new towns to be built within the Golan Heights area, each town to effectively be home to 2,000 families, and the Ministry of Construction and Housing has allocated money for planning new homes and for also for renovating public buildings, while the Ministry of Agriculture has allocated something like 35 million shekels for upgrading infrastructure, and the Ministry of Immigration and Absorption is allocating money for community development and empowerment. And so the idea is to try somehow to upgrade the infrastructure, a massive amount of new money for a new sewerage system, and money being allocated for infrastructure within Katsrin itself, including vacating the city's market and soccer pitch, as well as other money for development grants, for developing tourism. There's a lot of money that's been allocated to the Ministry of Defense to clear minefields in the area as well, building guest houses, developing heritage sites and nature reserves. Unfortunately, the Society for the Protection of Nature in Israel has opposed the government plan, saying that the government decision offers the Golan Heights mainly devastation and destruction to both nature as well as unique open spaces in this part of the country, given that the Golan is, of course, one of the areas that Israelis like to escape to when they go looking for slightly quieter times for a holiday away from the city. The Golan Heights is open to vultures and to gazelles and to wolves and to hundreds of types of wild animals and plants, which attract millions of visitors each year. And of course, the Society for the Protection of Nature in Israel is very concerned about what this means for all of that wildlife and that nature while developing the area for residential inhabitation. My question to the government on this is, what about keeping people occupied? Because the reason that people live in the central part of Israel by and large is not only because of the infrastructure and the housing availability, not only because of that, but because that's where jobs are. That's where people can get to work every day. So the question I have is, when people go and live in the Golan Heights area, what will they do for a living? And how will they be able to support their families? And until such time as there is an answer to that question, I don't think that there are going to be people who will be willing to make the move to go and live there. I think that there are many, many Israelis who would love to live in a more rural setting away from the hustle and bustle of the central part of Israel. Absolutely. Providing that they have a way to keep themselves occupied and keep themselves, keep their families kept. And in the Golan at the moment, unfortunately, the opportunities for work are relatively limited.
Yeah, so it's quite an ambitious plan, double it in the next 3 years. But like you said, an infrastructure must be improved in respect of creating employment. A problem we have in South Africa, of course, having one of the highest unemployment levels in the world. A look back on 2021, we've got a couple of minutes left. What would you say was the most influential event in Israel in 2021?
Yes, I did promise that we would try to do something of a look back this week. And I do encourage people to write in, those who are awake at this time in the morning on a holiday weekend and are listening in. I do encourage people to write in and let me know what they would like to hear about in terms of a look back on 2021. But I'm starting by thinking about what I think has been the most influential event in Israel during this current year. And, you know, obviously, the COVID pandemic needs to be up there in terms of how it's influenced things during the course of this year, both our recovery from the initial shock during 2020 and also the way in which the new variants have developed. But if I was to single out one event which I think has had an influence on Israel and how 2021 has panned out for Israel, then I would say it's the change of government, the replacement of Prime Minister, the fact that former Prime Minister Netanyahu is no longer the leader of the government, which he's led for so many years. He's almost became an institutional institution in Israel in terms of being head of the government. And all of a sudden, after all of those elections, one after the other, where we couldn't get a result, finally a government was formed. We now have a new prime minister. There was a lot of skepticism around Naftali Bennett and how he would function as prime minister, whether that would be the right decision, whether it's just simply somebody in a position holding situation in order to get rid of a prime minister, former prime minister Netanyahu, who had been seen to become a little bit too comfortable in his position. So for me, that whole change, the whole political upheaval, and then finally getting a new government in place to get the machinations of government going, for me, that's been the single most influential event in 2021. Of course, a lot of other things and interesting things to talk about in 2021, both good and not so good. We'll use the rest of this week to try and to discuss some of those.
I'm looking very forward to it. Anthony Reich, as always, a pleasure. I'll be chatting to you again, most probably a little bit earlier than normal by a couple of minutes, so we can squeeze in our 2021 highlight. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll be chatting to Anthony Reich, same time, same place, tomorrow morning, just a couple of minutes earlier, so that we can squeeze in the 2021 highlight.